Your word to our hearts, and then open our hearts to your word. Amen. This is an uncomfortable text in many ways, short one, but it really hit me for a loop over the course of this week. And I want to introduce it by telling you two little stories about two conversations I had yesterday. The first has to do with having met somebody I've been part of or been connected to over time, the last few years, with a kind of book study group I'm involved with. An older man, he's well over 80 by now. He's recently remarried. Not a Christian, but now he says he's a kind of person on a journey. He married a Christian woman, second marriage, his first wife died. And he says she's introduced me to a completely new world. First of all, she had two children. One of them her own and the other adopted. And the second one was a woman, or was a young girl, who had FASD. He says that was a real kind of interesting kind of event for her. And then, as those daughters grew up, one of them then became a foster parent to 9 children, 6 of them FASD. And he says, you know, this woman who I just married, she has introduced me to a world I never knew before. She is an amazing person, and her children are amazing people. And I have learned so much, and I still want to learn. Here's a man over 80. He's probably thinking, you know, maybe it's time just to kind of start thinking about slowing down. But no, he's speeding up. Extraordinary. This person's second wife, she's a Christian. And this has been part of her pilgrimage, her gift to the world, parenting these young kids. Extraordinary. This is an older gentleman who I've learned to really care about. And so it's really quite a fascinating thing to listen to him. Then I had another conversation, and I hope I don't trouble you too much by relating it, but I was told by a young fellow who went to a book launch this last week, McNally Robinson, and it was a woman, or a book that was presented and kind of launched by this woman who was transsexual. And she's from one of our communities here in southern Manitoba, Mennonite. And I said, so who was there? Was it well attended? He said, yeah, it was really well attended. He said, you'd never see these people otherwise. I said, so why did they come here? Well, they thought they were safer here. And this person, I read an article about her, and she's kind of, she wishes she could come back to her home, but she knows she would never be accepted here. She would really love to be with her people, but she knows she can't, at least not now. It's not safe. And then I thought of today's message. And on the face of it, our text is a feel-good story. Widows are in need. They grow in numbers. And so the church appoints deacons to help distribute aid. End of story. Life goes on. We've fixed that one. And yet our text offers a few more details which may give us a slightly different perspective. In the previous chapter, we read that Donations to the church were already being fraudulently claimed and given. A bit of the rot has set in. In those days of exuberant growth, everybody wants to jump on board. People want to be seen as people who have something to give. They want to get a reputation in the church because somehow those people who are giving or those people who are generous are being celebrated. But now, with relation to these widows, there is a charge of discrimination. The Hellenistic Jews, those who spoke Greek, and those who perhaps were raised outside of Jerusalem, and perhaps outside of Judea, perhaps those that come from farther away and now have come back because perhaps their husbands have passed away, and they have no one to support them, and they've come back to their home. And yet there's no one there to care for them. Why? Because there seems to be an underlying prejudice against those who have been far away, who've grown up outside this kind of orbit of faith and piety, who have never felt the need to come back to the mothership, to the mother place, in order to kind of be faithful, who have perhaps learned strange customs, and perhaps haven't valued the same things. And so they are discriminated against. Perhaps language was the issue. But also perhaps there's a clear-cut case of religious or cultural snobbery. You see, this kind of snobbery, if you will, or certainly that distinction made between who's in and who's out, was made already in the Old Testament. If you look in the book of Ezra, you know, that little-known book somewhere in the middle of the Bible somewhere that almost nobody ever reads, it's there. Those who have intermingled in the exile in Babylon, who are now invited to come back to Israel, they are told they have to give up their married wives if they want to stay. Otherwise, they are kicked out. And so here, 500 years later, this idea still stands. The question is, who is in and who is out? And this question is still alive and well in first century Judah. Now, in our text, this story, or this situation, is taken care of almost immediately. The church leaders, the 12, see this problem for what it is and seek to redress it immediately. And they, those that are the 12, should continue to give oversight to the mission of the church through prayer and evangelism, and allow other people who show gifts and talents for leadership, 7 of them to be exact, to come and distribute the goods to the people who need it. Now, if you notice the names of these people, you'll notice that almost all of them have Greek names. They find Greek people to work with Greek widows so that they can understand them, probably, and thereby redress what has been missing for so long. And also be able to know that they are meeting the needs of the people who are so affected. And so then, the word continues to spread, And there are many convicts. There are many converts to Judaism. Maybe they are convicts. There are many converts to Judaism in Jerusalem, it says, and there are many converts from the priesthood. And so this potential problem, or just incipient problem for the church, was avoided. Now, what happened? First of all, if you look at the story, there are three things I see that happened here. First of all, the leadership in the committee, or in the community of the Spirit, that is the community of the early church, took on principles, and I see three of them. The first one was that leadership arises from the community's mundane but necessary functional needs. That is, the church responds to the needs that appear from the ground up. It wasn't about some great spiritual issue. It had to do with what was a fundamental need of the people who come to their congregations. And then what happens is that God gifts those whose gifts are needed in order to accomplish the needs that are present. These were people above reproach who were then given the task and who could meet it because they had leadership gifts. Secondly, the leadership arises from the below rather than from above. It wasn't as if they were imposed from the top, it was they were located from those among the people that were in need. The apostles gave leadership and oversight and prayer, but the leadership was called out from those who were in need, and therefore it was appropriate to the people they were addressing. And then finally, the leadership derives out of the functioning need of the church. All leadership does. It's not just the ones that are important, or at least seem important, but it is for all the needs in the church. The church should have a kind of a place for people to address the needs in the church. It's not just pastors. It's not just people of spiritual recognition of spiritual gifts, but it's everyone, from the people who need to arrange chairs to the people who need to kind of take care of meals, all the way to those who work in other capacities. All churches need to be able to find leadership within them, their own selves. This is love in action. This is the way the early church moved and operated. When leaders were needed for important and perhaps even less important roles, people were called out with specific ministries to serve in this way. But then this passage, you'd think it was over, it isn't. The reason that the apostles were not allowed, did not allow themselves to go into this kind of ministry, was the fact that they saw in their own ministries the need for time and energy to pray and share the good news. This was their calling. And what is the good news? I am learning over time in these last number of years that the good news is changing in form what I used to think it was. Not that the essence of it is changing, but how the church presents it. the ways in which I used to think of church is traditional. You know, you go, you are there, your life revolves around the church, it becomes your second home, and you're very insular, and you kind of associate mostly with people who are in church. You know, the world isn't that way anymore. Maybe I'm just late coming to it. I sometimes feel that way. But there are so many other people that are in need of something that the church can offer. Love, hope, healing. And we often don't even see it. Maybe that's just me. But I wonder, am I? What's wrong with the church? Am I not seeing? Where is that leadership? We have many varieties of this good news these days. There are those that promote a kind of health and wealth gospel. If you're okay, then you'll be doing okay. And if you're not doing okay, then you're not okay. Or perhaps, don't worry, someday it'll all be over and you don't have to worry about it anymore. Just get through these tough times. So there's that kind of escapist mentality. Or perhaps just go inward. It's not the outside that matters, it's the inside. I believe that the 12 needed to devote their time to the Word of God, not just to understand what to say and to get strength to say it, but it meant to discern the people who they were addressing. What are their needs? What are the people like who are hearing that this good news, this gospel, is actually going to change you in your world and open you to see this Jesus again for the very first time? In some ways, we need to think again like the 12, that they're not just growing the church, they're also being able and willing to preach the church, to give themselves to prayer. Far more prayer is needed. Far more discernment is needed about who is in our congregations, what the state of faith is in our world, in our communities. What do people really need? Remember this story of John Stott, great English evangelical preacher, who passed away a few years ago. But it is said that he had this thick book. He prayed through that every day, and he made notes. He would add some notes every day, and he would go through that. And as he kind of went through it, sometimes the ones that he knew how they had ended, he would be able to cross off, and then he would just add more. But that was his practice. He would pray through that every day. I know that isn't me, but maybe it should be. Because so many people who are so tied with the spiritual climate are those who pray much. Bishop Tom Wright, whose lectures we read here in the morning in our Adult Connection class, suggests that this is the challenge to pastoral ministry of preaching and teaching today. is to be much more the people of prayer, to be much more the people who understand what God is calling us to in our time, not just in a previous time, or not just in a time that we think is out there, but that God is leading us to. That we need to pray and uphold the continued work and growth of the church in our world, for our people, the ones we connect with. What are the issues? And I would suggest that in the next years to come, we will have much rethinking to do as to where is the church going and what does it need to focus on. There are many things that are different for me now that I see than that I saw 20 years ago when I started here. And so the church needs again and again to fall on their proverbial knees and pray and say, God, where are you leading us to? What really is our need here and now? That's what these six verses or seven verses told me. And it's kind of knocked me for a loop. And I thought they were plain, simple verses. And I thought, what am I going to get from these? And what can I say to you? It's challenged me deeply. And I trust these verses challenge you deeply as you allow the Spirit to kind of winkle them into the warp and woof of your life.